Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
We saw a headline about this book a couple of weeks back. We got really excited. We reached out and found out we were able to have the author on and got really excited about it. And it's a fascinating story. We talked about it on the show for like a half hour. What would you want to invest time in to learn more about and how good could you get? And joining us now, Maria Konnikova. You can give her a follow on Twitter, at M. Konnikova. She is a New York Times best-selling author, a contributor to The New Yorker, and her newest book is entitled The Biggest Bluff, How I Learned to Pay Attention, Master Myself, and Win, came out yesterday. You can find it everywhere you get books. Maria, thank you so much for the time. We really appreciate it. I kind of want to just backtrack and ask you, what was the reasoning for this? What made you want to dive into a topic like this, learn how to play poker? How did this all come about?
It's a great question. And it's not like I just wanted to learn some skill and spend some time doing something random. Really, I wanted to write about luck and about the role that luck plays in our lives. And I wanted to try to figure out, can we figure out where skill ends and chance begins? What are the limits of what we can control? And that's a really, really big topic. So I needed a way into it. And I started reading about game theory and came across John von Neumann's work. And John von Neumann, who's one of the fathers of game theory, was a poker player. And he loved poker. And I found out that game theory actually came out of poker because von Neumann thought that poker was just the perfect analog for human decision making. It was a game of incomplete information where there are things I know, there are things you know, there are things we both know. And we try to figure out, well, what do you know? And how do I make the best decision I possibly can, given that I'm never going to know everything? This sounded really interesting to me. And I thought, hey, maybe this is a way into the topic. So I started reading about poker. And I thought, bingo, I'm going to learn this game. I'm going to find someone who can teach me. I'm going to dive in. I'm going to see what I can do. And I'm going to use it as a way of exploring this question of skill versus chance. And it was supposed to be just 1 year. And instead, I found myself as a professional poker player 3 years later.
Now, I have to ask, as somebody who plays poker, how much did you learn? How much is skill? How much is luck? How do you break down the percentages?
It's a really difficult thing to answer because the answer depends on your time horizon. In the immediate term, so one hand, one tournament, one game, the luck factor is huge and anyone can win. You know, I can sit down with my coach, Eric Seidel, and beat him, even though he is a million times better than I will ever be, just because in the immediate term, luck is huge. But if he and I were to play 10 times, 100 times, 1,000 times, he's going to take all my money. Over the long term, it's really a game of skill, and the variance really evens out. But in order for that to happen, you do have to look at a longer time horizon. So I always recommend that people not take, you know, pick one tournament and say, yeah, I'm amazing, I did well, or, oh, I suck, I didn't do well. And instead try to say, okay, let's look a little bit further ahead, because the only way you're going to be able to tell if you are actually skilled at this is if you keep doing this and you see whether you're emerging as a winner or a loser.
Well, Maria, I think it's interesting because we applied this when we talked about this topic and we put it to other sports. So like golf is a pretty big sport for us for our hobby. We love to play golf in our off time. I'm not a very good golfer, but I'm trying to get better. And we talked about how many hours would it go into the range and practice putting and then actually playing on different courses. What goes into learning and becoming good at poker? Like when you say you train for a year and you learn all the nuances, what is like a typical day for you in the first couple weeks of learning poker?
Well, the first couple of weeks was probably pretty different for me than for most people because I knew nothing. I didn't know how many cards were in a deck. So when you talk about starting from zero, I mean, I'm starting from absolute zero. So at the beginning, it was a lot of reading. Eric Seidel, who was my coach, gave me some books on poker strategy. You know, I read The Basics, Harrington on Hold'em, and I really read them. So I didn't just skim the books. I took notes. I took margin notes. I asked questions. And then I sat down with Eric, and we went over all my questions, and we talked through the theory, and we talked through what was going on. And once he had a good handle on the fact that I wasn't just going to completely lose my shirt, he said, okay, now start playing. And I started off playing online. So I would actually go to New Jersey every day because online poker is legal there and it's not legal in New York. Yes, it is quite funny. I was amused. I was reverse commuting to Hoboken and sitting in cafes so that I could play poker. And I would record by hand. I would actually record my screen so that I could then go over it with Eric and we could figure out what I had to work on, what mistakes I was making, how I was thinking through things. And that was the early part of my learning process.
We're talking with Maria Konnikova. She's a New York Times bestselling author, a New Yorker contributor. Her latest book, The Biggest Bluff, How I Learned to Pay Attention, Master Myself, and Win. Started at a base level of zero playing poker, learned all about the game, ended up having some pretty good success. You can give her a follow on Twitter, at M. Konnikova. Now, if my information is correct, I believe I read that you started entering tournaments, and you ended up winning some pretty sizable tournaments. What was that experience like for you? And then what was the reaction? I don't know what these – I've never been on like a poker circuit and played in any tournaments myself. But was there like a reaction from other people like, who is this person and how is she coming in here and winning this?
Yes. I mean, it was surreal. So I won my first major international title almost exactly a year from the first time I ever entered a casino and sat down at a poker table. And it was a big one. It was the PCA National Championship, which is the Poker Stars Caribbean Adventure. And I went through a field of hundreds of people, and the final table had all these people who I knew. I'd watched them play on TV, and I just thought I was going to absolutely get crushed. And the fact that I managed to win was just mind-blowing to me. And, yeah, everyone was like, who in the world is this person? And why did she luck box this thing? You know, she doesn't deserve it. I should have won. I'm better than she was. And you know what? A lot of them probably are better than I was. But that actually got the world's attention, the poker world's attention. And after that, I got a sponsorship from Poker Stars. So I joined Team Pro, and I spent the next year – I spent 8 months out of the year traveling the circuit and playing in major events. And I wanted to do it because I actually wanted to prove to myself that I wasn't just lucky, that I could replicate this. And I did. So within 2 years, I ended up winning over $300,000 playing poker.
Oh, my God.
And that was incredibly gratifying. Wow.
So, okay, the natural follow-up to that, Maria. And look, we've read about your backstory, how accomplished you are as a writer. I mean, how do you go on tour and then not say, well, I'm done writing. I'm dominating poker now. So it's the next stage of my life. Are you smoking cigarettes now? Like, what's life like for you becoming a pro poker player?
I'm not smoking cigarettes. And I, you know, I love writing. Writing is what I do. It's what I am. I would, you know, I'd feel like a part of me was missing if I stopped doing it. So it was one of these things where I felt like it was time to step back a little. 8 months of the year traveling is a lot. It takes a toll on you. It's exhausting. And so I just thought, you know what, it's time for me to take a step back to actually write this damn book and do what I was supposed to do a few years ago, which I did. And, you know, I had no desire. I wasn't going to be stopping playing poker. I had this idea that my book was going to come out. It was June 23rd, the middle of the World Series of Poker. I was supposed to be in Las Vegas right now. I was supposed to be playing the main event next week. And obviously that didn't happen because COVID stopped live poker in its tracks. And so you have to readjust. It's something that poker teaches you. You can't predict the future. You don't know what cards are still going to come. So you just do your best. And that's what I'm doing right now, just taking it one step at a time, focusing on the book. But who's to say that I can't do both sometime down the line and continue playing and writing, because I can write from anywhere in the world.
Yeah. In what ways? I don't know if it would. Like, I play poker once in a blue moon. I know how to play, but I don't dive in all that much. But as somebody that did, in what ways, if any, did poker, it's such a critical thinking sport in certain regard, did it change your personal life? Like, when you went away from the poker table, did you evaluate things differently? Do you approach things differently?
Absolutely. I mean, I think most fundamentally, it taught me how to think more probabilistically, how to actually understand what probabilities mean. It's so hard for the human brain to grasp, you know, what 2% is, what 10% is. Poker forces you to actually learn to do that well, because otherwise you're going to lose a lot of money. You have to figure out, you know, what's going on here? What is my edge? And it made me, I think, both a lot better at interpreting information, but also when I'm making decisions, it's really helped me not be too confident and to say things. I mean, people think I'm really strange when I say something like this, but I actually think it's very helpful. I'll say things like, well, I'm 75% sure of this, or like I'm 60% yeah. sure of this. I try to calibrate my opinions so that people know, you know, how much I'm actually willing to stand behind them. And I think the other thing it taught me.
I just can't fathom, Maria, not to cut you off, but I can't fathom like a family member saying, Maria, I need you to support me on this issue. Are you willing to commit? And you go, well, I'm 65% in.
I
got to calculate that other 35% that I don't like.
I haven't seen the turn card yet.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there have been a few of those conversations. But the other thing I think it's taught me is to really separate the decision process from the decision outcome, to realize that all you can really do is focus on your process, on making the best decision you can with the information you have. And then the outcome's going to be what it's going to be. As long as you get your money in as a favorite, you did a good thing, and you should make that decision again, even though sometimes it's not going to go in the right way. You know, you're 75% to win, but the 25% is going to happen.
Right.
Even if you're 98% to win, the 2% is going to happen, and that's okay. So poker has really taught me to just focus on the things I can control and let go of the outcome. It's going to be what it's going to be, and there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah, that's a great life philosophy. Maria Konnikova is our guest. Her newest book, The Biggest Bluff, How I Learned to Pay Attention, Master Myself, and Win, out now. Go check it out. New York Times bestselling author. Now, you mentioned you started playing online, and that's kind of how you learn. You're filming your sessions and that kind of stuff. Obviously, far different from when you're playing in person and at a table where everybody's looking at each other. Did you have a tell initially? Did you have to work on a tell? Like, how did that go for you?
I don't know if I had a tell initially. There was no one who could have told me. I hope I didn't. But I know that because I was so incredibly nervous, there were certain things, like my hands would shake when I had a big hand.
Yeah.
That wasn't great. And that was really hard to control. But everything was so new to me and everything was so exciting or scary. But I was really emotional at the beginning. And it's really difficult to control things like shaking hands. That's something that happens almost involuntarily. And it took some time for me to calm down, to gain confidence. And I think after that, I became a lot better. But I did actually work with a coach, Blake Eastman, who looks at physical tells. And he, by the time I worked with him, there was already a lot of televised footage of me playing. And he reviewed hours of me playing and helped me work on certain things that he thought might give away information.
Do you think you benefited going to some of these higher-end tournaments? I mean, when you win $300,000, I mean, you're talking about some serious money play tournaments here. Do you think you benefit not knowing who anybody is when you show up to a table versus some of the other poker players being familiar with one another?
No, I actually think that's bad. I think it's as much information as you have is good. So having more information is never a bad thing. So if I know who someone is, I can look them up. I can do some homework. I can figure out how they play. I can analyze videos of them playing in the past and seeing, you know, how they act, how often they bluff, how aggressive they are. So it's actually great if I know them. It's even better if they don't know me. So the best thing is information asymmetry. When I know who I'm playing with, but they don't know who they're playing with. So I think I actually lost some of that edge as time went on, because at the beginning I was just a girl, and then I lost my anonymity as people figured out who I was.
Yeah.
And that worked against me.
How many hours a day were you putting in when you started learning and kind of progressed to the point where you played tournaments?
I was playing or studying 7 days a week, and my shortest day was 8 hours. It would be 8, 9, 10 hour days. Wow. I was really
you put in the work. Wow.
Yeah, because I knew I had a limited amount of time, and I really wanted to give it my all. And I knew that if I just kind of said, do it a few hours here and there, I wasn't going to get results, and the book wouldn't have worked.
Right.
It would have just betrayed the whole project.
Yeah. Well, get you out on this one, Maria. Do you have another project that you're working on or another project in mind? I don't know if you want to do something similar to this with another kind of topic, but what are you thinking of a new project?
No, I actually, what I said, I was taking it one day at a time. I meant it.
Okay.
Right now I'm just focused on getting this book out in the world. It's taken 3 years of my life. And so I really want to put all of my brain power and all of my emotional capacity behind it. And then Once that's done, then I'll pause and see what I want to do next. I'm staying open-minded.
I love it. That's awesome. Maria Konnikova.
Remarkable story, Maria.
The Biggest Bluff, How I Learned to Pay Attention, Master Myself, and Win. Go check out the book. She's a New York Times bestselling author, New Yorker contributor. Amazing story. We saw it, and we just thought we got to get her on and talk about this. Maria, thank you so much for the time. Best of luck with the book, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
There you go.